So, Stephen, one of the things that Ian and I are chatting about is the fact that we've all been forced to become a lot more savvy around technology, remote working, etc. And the question that Ian posed earlier, just before the break, was, do I think that we are ever going back to where we were? Ian, can you give me your answer, and then I'm interested in Steve's.
So, Howard, I think this has been one of the best experiments we could have ever asked for, because it's been that necessity rather than a choice. And I think the big challenge was a lot of individuals felt very comfortable. And if you look at the various surveys, it was more about workers and individuals that were happy to work from home. The reluctance came from, or work remotely, we should say, the reluctance came from the CEOs and the management, and I think it was a control aspect. But now that we're in a situation where we actually don't have a choice, and I'll let Stephen weigh in on the technology side, but the fact that we've proved that we can do it, yes, of course we're going to have to learn new etiquette and new styles and probably do things differently, but it does work, and we are able to continue for most industries. I'm not saying all, but I think that this is going to be a paradigm shift. And when we do come out of this, we're going to be much more empowered, and we're probably going to be more productive. That's my view on where we'll come out.
Mm. Stephen?
You know, it's such a complex issue, and it's such a societal shift that has been forced on the world in many, many, many respects. But technology was always creeping along and quietly infiltrating, sometimes not so quietly, but certainly infiltrating our daily lives more and more and more. Everybody, or the vast majority of people. I mean, WITS did a survey. Here's an interesting one. 35 of their students do not have smartphones. I mean, how's that?
Wow.
Student
wow.
body that big? 35.
Wow.
It's amazing that there are 35, but only 35. Because they wanted to know how they could do some education remotely using the various platforms that they have. And 35 were not connected. So that just shows you the depth of penetration, even within the context of South Africa, of smart devices. And that in and of itself has brought a complete change in how people operate generally in daily society. And education has lagged enormously because of lots of reasons in South Africa. And I think Ian's right. The sort of need to command and control has definitely slowed the progress of home working. So I agree. We're going to see a massive improvement in the number of people who can work. But I think what is going to actually come out of this is a hybrid setup. We're going to see a lot more flexi working, a lot more people operating partially at home, partially online, and a whole new space is going to open up on how, as you called it in the etiquette, on how you manage that, because it is enormously intrusive. I've found personally the last week has been, well, I traveled, so I've been on lockdown for nearly 3 weeks now. So I found it incredibly difficult to separate my work and home life. And also the fact that I'm not going anywhere means I have back-to-back video meetings continuously. So I'll end up actually spending more time focused on a screen, and that's incredibly tiring. So a lot of how we work, a lot of what we do, and the way that we do it is going to change enormously. But I believe that it will probably come out more into a flexi working environment than people never going into the office. I think there's going to be a lot of it'll accelerate the trend of the co-working and co-renting type space where you'll need the offices, or rather have flexible offices, more and more. So a massive shift in the way that we operate technologically. And also, apart from just the way you work, the way you interact with organizations on sales, I think there's going to be a huge push, because a lot of people were scared of online shopping. I think we're going to see a massive spike in online shopping and convenience shopping through online methodologies rather than popping into the stores. So fundamentally, technology is just going to step in, and people are going to use it as a complete and utter utility. And the benefit of what's happened now globally is that many who were scared, too lazy, just inertia, whatever the cause was, are embracing technology simply because they have no choice. And that, after a couple of weeks or months of this, there's pretty much no way back.
Mm. Yeah. Ian? Your thoughts?
So Howard, I think where Stephen makes a valid point, and this is really going to push the needle for me or move the needle, is on the education side. Is I'm looking now just at my kids, how both of them have taken, as the saying goes, like a duck to water, and they've embraced the technology. The teachers have struggled a little bit,
within
a couple of days, and I think with a little bit of tweaking, they're jumping onto Zoom calls, they're getting onto WhatsApp, they're getting onto platforms where they're embracing it. And well, I've seen it. I don't know what the rest of the community is feeling, but my kids are enjoying the interaction, and I find that they're absorbing more because it talks to them. And I know that sounds very strange in a way, but they seem more engaged, and I think that could resonate very well.
It's so interesting because we've noticed that with my daughter as well, is that she's much more engaged in her subjects, excuse me, learning it this way than at school.
I think you just got to realize that we're living in unique times now. Things are incredibly fraught, is probably the right word. And a lot of people, I've seen it with my kids as well, a lot of people that I work with are starting to change the hours and the manner in which they work and focusing on this work thing to try to settle them down in this crazy type of environment. So I think that the greater engagement we're seeing now, the greater commitment we're seeing now, will probably fade over the next 3 weeks. And towards the end, we'll probably find less engagement in general. So I don't think we can replace human contact and human interaction going forward. Mm-hmm. But I think the blend of the two are going to be very, very interesting in how it gets effectively worked out. So you have human interaction and human meetings and in-place work when it's needed. But the ability, you know, everyone keeps talking about the always on, always there, immediately available world that we live in. And in some cases it worked well. In some countries it worked far better than others. But I think we're going to see a global shift to much more of that in an effective way where people's boundaries between the office and the home, their work and their home life are going to be reshaped quite considerably using these various technological tools. And they'll become a background factor in just the way it is. Mm. And that is going to be the big shift that we'll see in the next year or two post this whole crazy sort of intense environment that we're in right now.
8:38 joining us on the line, Ian Basarabi, and it's also we've kind of amalgamated our tech talk with Stephen Ambrose into this conversation, which is actually pretty cool, if you ask me. 8:39. So we're talking about the fact that we seem to have shifted, not we seem to have, we have been forced to shift to remote working. Ian, that also, it obviously has a tremendous impact on virtual events, Shield Rim, panel discussions, and what I've also seen is many artists, musicians saying, you know, come into my living room, let's have an impromptu show. There's been a tremendous amount of that sort of thing happening.
Absolutely, Howard. And I actually saw on the news last night that Elton John did a song from his kitchen because there was supposed to be an awards evening, and all the artists turned around and said, well, let's not cancel it, exactly to you saying, let's just do it virtually. And there's just so much creativity that's coming out. I know last week the Shul Choir from Marshall put together a video which the rabbi showed just before Shabbos, and everyone was doing it from their own places where they were living, but they managed to pull this whole thing together. And I just think that there's opportunity in this. I think there's going to be challenges because, and Stephen may be better to speak on this, but a lot of these events generate a lot of money and they're quite costly. And that whole model has been turned on its head now, because now you don't have the whole cost of setting up a physical space and going to that expense and having to get there. But equally, when people join, it makes it a little bit more challenging once you've given something to someone for free. How do you charge them for attending in the future?
Yeah, Ian, Stephen, your thoughts?
I think, again, it's never as simple as all that. The world has been moving towards the so-called gig economy, where people were working remotely, interacting virtually in many, many cases. And it was, I hate this word, but it was disintermediating the entire value chain around everything. I mean, the music industry fundamentally reshaped itself. The television and marketing around television and print completely and utterly changed in the last couple of years. And in fact, I think that this whole global shutdown, this whole global virtual operating setup is going to entrench and finally put the nail in the coffin for print media and for media that is no longer available on the internet. So the benefits of technology is that the cost, as Ian said, the cost of creating all this has dropped exponentially. And it's still getting cheaper, as well as the quality is improving. I was watching CNN, and they were doing high value programs from people's homes, and the quality and the production quality of the entire thing was exactly the same as it was before, without all the expensive cameras and fancy technology that they were using. I've no doubt they're not using a standard little webcam, but still, the cost of producing a show has dropped enormously across the globe. And that in itself brings massive benefits. One, it democratizes this type of thing across a massive user base. It brings people into the industry across the world that would never have been able to get there because there were just far too high barriers to entry. So we're going to see the emergence of a whole new way of communicating, both the media, both entertainment, both education, the way we work at home and at the business is going to shift considerably. And the benefit of this is that there'll be a lot less friction in getting things done. So the speed to market for new ideas and new products is probably going to be exponentially better than it ever was before. And the benefit of that, so for example, I mean, this is a perfect tech example. How are they trying to model a cure, or rather a vaccine for COVID-19, is not using the traditional methodologies that have happened in the past, where it was manual, people came in, they did massive trials. They are modeling the entire thing electronically in cyberspace, for want of a better word, to before they even get near human trials. So they're creating new medicines, new whole areas of science using technology, using computers, using modeling, using fancy algorithms and massive computing power globally to create solutions to problems that have vexed humanity for years. I mean, potentially the cure to common cold is sitting in some Amazon Web Service server somewhere in the world right now. So there are going to be exponential and fundamental shifts coming out of this pause that the world's had to endure for lots of good reasons. And the scope and the creep of technology, and that's what I wanted to talk about actually later.
Well, let's talk about it now.
The fact is, the scope of this has changed everything dramatically. The web has become much more than simply a nice to have. It is the fundamental building block of modern society. And the security and the dark side of it is going to become more and more relevant to everybody going forward, because the amount of hacking and nonsense that is happening right now, there's been a massive spike. Every single player in that space has noticed a huge spike in security issues with remote working, with people being out and about, using home computers, connecting via unsecured networks, using passwords all over the show. I mean, for example, I mentioned this last week, Housetrip. Housetrip has become the de facto party communication tool for tons of people. And from being a rather obscure little program which started in 2016 and did reasonably well, suddenly exploded with millions, tens of millions of new signups in a very short period. And all of a sudden there's a whole scare about it's being hacked and everybody's losing their passwords for everything else through it. And what it's done is just highlighted poor practice for most people. Most people have one or two or three passwords that they continually reuse across everything that they do. And that is absolutely 100% the worst thing you can do in a concentrated environment where you're logging into your office server using that password, where you're logging into your bank using that password, where you're logging into Housetrip using that password, and some arbitrary weird shopping site that you've never heard of using the same password. And then you really wonder why all of a sudden everything that you have is being hacked. You cannot take security and cybersecurity lightly in this age of remote working. It's a huge risk. You're putting yourself, your financial well-being, and your company's very future in the hands of some remote hackers, because they've always worked remotely. They're way ahead of the curve. They've been hiding and working this way for years, so they know every trick in the book. So simply put, guys, everybody should use a unique password for every single major thing that they do. If you want to use one password for some informational websites, do that. But anything where you transact with your credit card, anything where you transact with any bank, any office, anything to do with work or financial or anything that has any of your personal information involved in it, you need a unique password. You should use a password manager like LastPass. There are a couple of others that are out there that are really good. And it just takes 2 seconds. Any one of them is better than none. And it really, really is important that this is not something people take lightly. I personally use one called Dashlane. It's a paid-for service, and it works brilliantly. So as we move more and more, and this is not stuff that will go away, as we move more and more into the remote working environment and the environment where more and more of our lives are online and more of our interaction with absolutely everything to do with our day-to-day lives and our work lives, you have to bring the idea of security front and center. It's the same thing as leaving a 50 rand note on the pavement outside your office or outside your door and wondering why someone wouldn't pick it up. Of course someone will pick it up. And it's just something no one would even think of doing. Why would you put 50 or 100 rand lying on the floor? It's crazy. Well, why would you use the same password for everything that you do online? That's simply crazy. And when you get hacked, it's always someone else's fault, but it actually goes all the way back to the simple fact that you have not taken the need for security really, really seriously. So it's those little subtle things that are going to change. I mean, back to Ian on this, but it's going to change the way that we think. It's going to change the way that we interact. And I think fundamentally and subtly, we're going to see all sorts of shifts around what we do online and how we do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that makes perfect sense. Ian, last words or final thoughts from you?
I think Stephen's raised such an important point, and I'd really appeal to all educators out there, and I don't just mean school educators, I mean educators within business, is that part of your transition or part of the learning path that you put people on include these fundamental principles of security and not just put the fear into people. I agree with Stephen. I think it's very important that we need to tell people what the risks are, but explain why. And I'll take it back to first principles. I remember when I was growing up and my parents gave me keys for the house the first time. I like looked after those keys like it was my best friend because I was so scared what would happen to me if I lost them. But I didn't understand why it was so important because of the risk. So I think don't make people fear it, because if people don't fear it, they won't embrace it. Explain to them why it's so important to have different passwords. Explain the vulnerabilities so people can protect themselves.
Absolutely.
No, I totally agree with that. I mean, this is not a fear conversation. This is almost a hygiene conversation. I mean, you have to wash your hands now. You know what the consequences are if you don't. The same thing goes with your online hygiene. If you constantly reuse the same 6-letter password, you know that at some point there's something's going to go wrong. And I mean, it's crazy. Put your wallet in your pocket. Don't leave it lying around. Keep your keys safe. Don't leave them lying around. Make sure your passwords are protected and safe and not lying around for other people to pick up and use. But we are going to see a huge, huge, and we're already seeing it, a huge increase in cybersecurity issues, in breaches, in attacks. It is the new frontier. Crime has gone virtual. The same as It used to be, you know, you wander down the road with a fancy ring, you've got your head knocked and you've got the ring taken. Well, today that people are doing that simply virtually through the internet. They are attacking businesses, stealing secrets, and it's not a fear thing, it's a reality thing. Be safe, you have to stay safe, and you have to take care of your assets and your password and your security and your bank accounts and your virtual assets are no less real in this world.
Absolutely.
So it's a key thing, and you're right. I think it's something that people don't know about because they're not taught this. It's not part of the fabric of how they learn how to behave online. They're just simply, I've got a computer connected to the internet and off I go. There is some serious challenges coming and there's some serious downsides to all this remote working and the whole new connected world. But keep reading, keep staying on top of it. I think there's so much information out there. And just the fundamentals are really not that difficult and most people will embrace them well. But the shift online is without question going to accelerate over the next 6 months. We'll see fundamental shifts. A lot of people will have the ability to work from home, which they never had before or weren't prepared to trust before. And we're going to see more and more need to protect the various companies, even small companies.
Yeah,
just because you've got a small company doesn't mean you're less of a target.
Yeah.
Again, if they steal 1 cent from a million people, that's still a lot of money.
Absolutely.
And 1 cent might not hurt you personally, but globally, it can create massive shifts and massive changes in how things work. So, you know, don't take it trivially. It's just not a trivial thing. It
absolutely
really is a fundamental
Stephen,
and
I do,
issue that we all need to deal with.
We do need to leave it there, unfortunately. It is 8:52. Stephen, Ian, thank you both as always. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.